Hey, good morning, everybody. Today is just a fantastic day. My name is Stu Turley, President and CEO of the Sandstone Group, and we're going to have a very, very heart-to-heart discussion with Valerie Penamonte, and she is actually an attorney out of Oklahoma City with John B. Davis Law, and she's a contract specialist over there. Thank you, Valerie, for stopping by the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me, Stu. I appreciate it.
I'll tell you, Valerie, I'm going to give a little bit of inside baseball for our listeners out there. And I've known your brother, Moses, your brother and I are all buddies. So, you know, we've all had a lot of fun over the years, and I've been really enjoyed his interaction on LinkedIn and everything. So I'm so sorry that you have a brother like Victor.
I've got another brother, too.
Oh, cool. And your other brother, Daryl.
Yeah.
And so what was it like growing up with Victor?
He was a great kid. He really was. I took care of him a lot when he was real little and, took him to back to school, night at school and all that kind of stuff. And
nice.
He and I have always been really close, and I treasured that relationship.
Yeah.
He really is a great guy. He's a great brother. I wouldn't trade him.
Well, one of the things that I enjoy is his comments are very thoughtful and well done on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is really a nice place to have thoughtful conversations. But Valerie, he let me in on some things. You've got some experience in the wind farms and in the contracting. Can we start on some of that? Because my belief is that we need to get the lowest cost kilowatt per hour to everyone on the planet, and we need to elevate people out of poverty. And that means getting the lowest kilowatt per hour with the least amount of damage or impact on the environment without subsidies. And so that formula involves wind, solar, nuclear, natural gas, coal, involves everything, but let's get the right formula. And there's a lot of controversies out there because just as I've been doing my research, and it seems like wind farms are needed, but on the wind farms, they were being advertised as, I think you sure have probably heard this, 20 years and 30 years on that they're going to last. And my numbers that I'm researching are showing up as 8 years. That they're lasting. So there's a huge disparity between how good they are versus the monetary returns on them. And we want to hear your contractor and your insights to what it is to actually work in the wind farms.
I've worked on over 50 wind farms.
Wow.
Yeah. And each one is a little bit different, but basically wind farms have a lot of, turbines have a lot of moving parts. And
right.
The propellers need to be replaced and the motors and everything. And so 20 to 30 years, I would have thought was way overly optimistic. If somebody had told me that in the beginning, I would have thought they were trying to sell me beachfront property in Omaha, Nebraska.
Right.
So, I think you're right in the 8 to 10 year range. And it requires maintenance. I mean, you have to have maintenance people close by to the sites to maintain the sites appropriately, or right. You're going to have downtime, which is costly and drives up your costs. And
right. And I was visiting with a lot of grid folks lately, and people are miscalculating. You can't just go. Do you remember Back to the Future with Christopher Lloyd?
Yes.
I just love that man. And when he would go, it's 14.3 gigawatts. Every time I'm talking gigawatts, it's kind of crazy. I always think of him. I'm jealous of the hair, though. You know, I kind of would love, to have that hair. But when you think about the grid, you can't just go, here's a 2 megawatt wind tower and say it's going to equal a 2 megawatt natural gas price generator, because you have to factor in the difference. And the difference is that as soon as you plop in wind turbines on a grid, instead of having the 20%, you have to add another 180. So for every one wind tower, you have to add actually another 180 wind towers in order to equal the same amount that you want to have in there for the same natural gas plant. So those economies of scale are not there. But it's the maintenance pieces that we're not hearing about. And how were you involved with those maintenance numbers or those kind of things? I mean, because you described a whole fleet out there of people that are required.
Yes, there are people required for the maintenance. They have to be available and basically on call. They generally station them remotely, so they are close to usually at least two or three wind farms for most efficiency. But try not to make it so that any one farm is over 140-mile radius.
Wow.
Away from the technician. One of my neighbors in Texas, when I was down there building a wind farm, he was a wind technician for another company's product. And so we got into a lot of discussions about maintenance and what he was required to do. And he would have times where he was very busy, especially after storms, where he would have to get out there and get things going again.
Right.
But maintenance, like anything with moving parts, maintenance is really the key to keeping it working reliably.
Right.
And I'm afraid that companies will lose sight of that, and that'll make even more downtime for wind and also decrease the lifespan on the wind farm as well.
Right.
So that's a key factor of the maintenance.
You know, I was tickled this weekend, and I was reading that Scotland got busted. They had cut down 14,000 trees to make room for their wind farms. And then I don't know if you heard these stories or not, but then they got the local power company had 50 of their towers were being run by generators to turn the turbines. So diesel generators were actually turning the blades, and boy, that was a black eye for them on that.
That's green smoke energy instead of green energy.
Yes. And I mean, there's also a ton of oil and leakage. Mm. The turbines, don't they take like 80 gallons of oil in the darn things to just.
Yeah. They're oil guzzlers. Yeah, they do. The setup for the turbine, other than the actual erection of the tower and the propellers themselves, is very intensive.
Right.
Make sure that you get everything filled and tested and checked and coordinated with the other turbines online. It's a very intensive process.
Right. Well, when you were working with those 50 wind farms, you saw them, I'm sure, from cradle to grave and all points in between. It's the cement trucks. It's the everything else. These are using a lot of diesel fuel. They're using a lot of just about everything, concrete, steel. And the legal side of that has got to be just nutty, too.
Well, you find a lot of wind farms in Texas. Texas isn't like a place like Arkansas, for example, where their environmental regulations are very, very tough.
Right.
The natural state. And they're really trying to push that with their environmental regulations. In fact, I kind of think they're going to give California a run for their money on environmental here pretty soon.
No way.
Yeah, they really have swung hard to the environmental protection, which, you know, I'm not saying is wrong, but it is a consideration when you build. But Texas is a lot more, let's say, forgiving of pollution and industry, particularly for the oil and gas industry and oil and gas products.
Right. But, so, you know, Arkansas, I love Arkansas. And if you're in Oklahoma City now, currently I'm over on the eastern side of Oklahoma, over by Lake Tenkiller.
Okay, beautiful area, beautiful.
And we have an overpopulation of bears, and we're at the foothills of the Ozarks. And so it's beautiful country, and they got nuclear one. So Arkansas has really a nice nuclear reactor there. So, I mean, I can understand that. It is beautiful. And I don't mind that because it's a good reason. Plus, wind doesn't work in Arkansas. I mean, the hills, you know, are not, I mean, they're not really good about that. But I did not know that about the regulations. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, they've been tough in the regulations. I want to say it's heading on to about 9 years now where I've really seen it swing towards the California model of intense regulation for environmental protection.
Do you know anything about Governor Huckabee now? Do you think she'll have an impact on that in the positive or the ability to drive that?
I have seen very little about Governor Huckabee's environmental thoughts and policies that she would propose. I think she's pro-business.
Nice.
And from what I have seen and what I've read, and it seems like she's very pro-business. I think that would be good if they can prove to her that, for example, wind is a viable industry that will bring a lot of quality jobs to Arkansas. Right. They've they're really working to elevate their image as a tourist attraction, a place to live, education.
And boy, they it is a beautiful place. I mean, I just absolutely, they don't deserve all of the jokes that they have against them from Arkansas, all of them. I mean, there's some applicable, you know. You know, I like both of my fans over in Arkansas, so we got to keep them happy, you know.
But, Razorbacks, huh?
Oh, I love Razorbacks. I and you know what's fun is when you go down in the Fayetteville Rogers area and everything else, the hats. I mean, you cannot swing around and you see those hats going to the game. I'm sorry. I would wear a hog hat if I was a Razorback fan. In fact, my neighbor about 2 miles down the road has Razorback stuff all through his yard. So they're rabid. I mean, they are absolutely rabid fans. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But let's also flip back over into the regulatory side in Texas and in the U.S. It seems like the regulatory side is actually going to be getting tougher throughout the U.S. and slowing down oil and gas and renewables. It doesn't seem like there's any discrimination regardless of energy. It just seems like there's, is that what you're saying as well too, Valerie?
I see a trend towards the renewables are not quite the darling they were, 12 years ago.
Right.
Initially, you know, renewables, especially wind, was the big darling of the new way that power is going to go is the answer to all our promises, 20, 30 year lifespan on a project, you know, all these great promises. And they just really didn't materialize. And then they found out that it was a lot more involved. And then I think they also hoped that the battery technology for storage would be a lot more developed by now, which I see. I follow that field very closely. I follow all the energy field in general closely. But I do think they thought the battery technology might be a little bit further along because I did work on a wind farm with battery storage capability. It was a small one in Washington State, and it was about 14 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And they were
changed since 14 years, but that...
Oh, that changed since 14 years ago, but they still really need to come a long way. And that's why I see a lot more interest now in the mini nuke processing.
Oh, yeah, the micro-reactors.
Micro-reactors, yeah. I see a lot more interest in the micro-reactors now because people are beginning to realize that not every reactor must melt down. That's not a requirement in the specifications when you start up a reactor.
Right. So
you're getting to be less afraid of it. Mother Jones Magazine has touted nuclear power for as green energy for I don't know how many years.
You know, I've been tracking that since COP26 on my podcast, and they snuck in language back then saying that natural gas and nuclear were okay. You know, they kind of did, it's okay. And then in COP27, they snuck it in again. And then the Biden administration in the original infrastructure bill snuck in language in their paragraphs. Nobody even said boo. They never even said anything. And it said natural gas and nuclear can be considered available for renewable funding was the language. And it's because they know they need it. All of a sudden, the EU and in Europe, they said it's now available for funding. And that was before that. And then in the Inflation Reduction Act, that snuck in there as well. So you're now seeing that gradual change that it's available for funding over the quietly because they didn't want to disturb their voter base. And it's interesting that you would say that.
Yes, natural gas, you know, for example, I live in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, and our biggest generator here is natural gas because of the location here. Coal generation wasn't popular when PSO, Public Service Company of Oklahoma, built their generation. So the generation here is natural gas as opposed to coal fire, like you got further north, northwest into Oklahoma. And I've not heard people in general complain about the plant. They complain about the Sun refinery burning off, but they don't complain about the PSO gas generation plant. But gas has the thing is, I think most of the people that I deal with who've worked in the wind industry and solar and in battery technology and hydrogen, they all kind of agree that we really are going to have to look at for a time to come until the battery technology is further along and we make some further advancements in energy production.
Right.
We're going to have a balanced portfolio and that gas and wind and solar, but we can't abandon, you know, there may even be a place for coal, a lot of them believe, for another 20, 30 years. And a smaller part of the portfolio because coal plants need maintenance too. And coal plants Their turnarounds are very fun.
Very fun.
Oh, very fun. Yes. Yeah, everybody has to live. Everybody has to do a cold turnaround once in their lifetime, or they don't have room to talk to anybody.
Oh, that's that. Now that is funny. And so when you sit back and take a look, all energy jobs, we have to hand it to all linemen. I mean, the oil and gas hands, they all are on the front lines, keeping the U.S. energy on track, you know, and delivering that great electric on the power grid. But you had mentioned there some of the wind farms were pretty tough on people, and there was an accident rating going on some of those. Could you allude to some more on that?
I was on a site where there were 3 deaths in 2 months. 3 people died on site in 2 months.
Wow. What was going on?
Lack of safety procedures. Now, first of all, let me tell you, my dad was in structural steel. He told me as a kid that everybody leaves the job site in the condition they came to work in.
Right.
And that's the culture I was raised in. In all the years I worked in construction and manufacturing on job sites, I never once was on a job site where there was one death.
Right.
Very few lost time accidents. So to experience 3 deaths in 2 months, sending people up into wind towers to work alone, which is a big no-no. You don't do that, because in one case, the gentleman flipped over in his harness and the weight killed him when he was upside down.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
That's so preventable. And then they turned right around 2 weeks later and sent another guy up in a wind tower alone right after that accident. And that's when I left that company.
When was it because they were budget strapped and just looking at the bottom line and not obeying safety rules? That's the first thing that comes to mind.
Yes. Whenever I go to work for any company, I always ask them about their safety policy, because my belief is safety is everybody's responsibility. If you see somebody trying to operate a crane without a crane pad, you stop them. It doesn't matter if you're the catering company that came through, or if you're one of their coworkers, you stop and tell them, so this crane pad's established. You don't go operating your crane on here. It's not a stable base to operate on. Crane's tip.
Wow. You know, and, Valerie, I'm going to cut you off right there for this comment. Outstanding. When you're interviewing for a job and then you hold up and go, time out, you know, what's your safety record? I would hire you on the spot if you asked me that, if I was the CEO of a company and you have the wherewithal to say, what's my safety record? Hats off to you. And anybody in the construction space ought to take note of what you just said. That means a lot.
Nobody's ever died on one of my sites, and I intend to die with that record, because I don't care if you're 7'5" and I'm not 7'5", I'm 5'4". I will stop you and I will make you get down and stop whatever you're doing. If you're speeding with a forklift truck, whatever, because safety is my responsibility, just like it is everyone else's.
Wow. How cool is that? One of the toughest interview questions I had, this was a million years ago. And the head Cabano asked me and said, what if we had on your quota to sell an inferior product? And I said, I wouldn't make quota, because I'd want to do what was right for the customer. And he said that was the right answer. And then when I got hired, I realized that I'm like, you hired me even though I would give up my quota and my commissions to do what was right for the customer. And he goes, yeah, you're out of, I think, 50 people. I was the only one that answered yes. I answered that way. And you got to do what's right. I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, you know, the battle cry now for companies is, you know, who's most important to them? And I always say customers, and most companies say shareholders. But let's face it, if you don't have customers,
right,
shareholders aren't going to make a lot of money.
Right. And they didn't win much money when they got lawsuits from those families of the safety. Do you follow Ed Davidson on LinkedIn by any chance?
No, I don't. Let me make a note of that name.
He is absolutely a great safety influencer on LinkedIn. And his videos are phenomenal. While they may be funny, every one of his stories on LinkedIn have an excellent safety story. Here's a crane that falls over, and then he explains the safety rules around it. So as being, Valerie, as you being in the safety field and everything else, that would be a great one for you to follow as well. And for any of our construction folks or any of the other CEOs, I was lucky enough to get tower certified for rescue and thoroughly enjoyed that. And I was not the guy actually out there turning their wrenches, but I enjoyed being able to get on the tower if I had to, you know, to save somebody.
Yeah, the tower rescue is very important to have on job sites, no matter what the job site. You never know what you're going to encounter that happens around your job site. I think people tend to look at their job sites as just a finite, you know, area like Lego blocks on a board, you know, just this finite little area they're dealing with. But your job site can encompass things around. I mean, when you work on wind farms, especially in small areas out in the country, you get involved with, you know, someone who thinks that you did something with their fence and their bull got out and now they need to get a new bull because their bull got scared and died because it was old. But, you know, you get involved with a lot of periphery that people sometimes don't think about.
Oh, yeah.
You really have to look at your job site as just a part, your immediate part of a larger environment that you need to be aware of what's going on in.
Now, since you're a Tulsan and you've been in Oklahoma, did you get your law degree from OCU?
No, I clerked for two attorneys and then I passed the bar.
No kidding. That's cool.
Abraham Lincoln did it and I did it too.
Valerie, you're the first I've heard doing that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's huge.
I look at law school just like, you know, any school is a value, and I didn't see any law school in value. Now, if I were still in California where you've got Loyola and Pepperdine, a lot of really good law schools around, I probably would have went to law school. But wow. I didn't see a good option for law school, and I didn't see where I was going to get anywhere near my money's worth, and it really wasn't going to fit in with my time frame. So I just decided where there was a way to get to my goal, I would find it, and I found it.
Valerie, that's huge. I'm sorry, that's... Congratulations. That's really cool. I've not met anybody like that. Now, I understand now that there is a family trait that I can see in the Pinamonte family. You know, Victor's a pretty smart cat, too. So, you know, I can see the genes kind of roll around in the family that way then. So, wait a minute. Did we compliment him?
You did. Yeah. I won't tell him, though.
Oh, no. We don't want to tell Victor that. So, you know, when we... was that a cat?
That was a cattail.
Oh, how cool. For our podcast listeners, Valerie had a cattail go by her camera, and I think that was one of the coolest things.
I'm so sorry. Maxine is, she'll be 18 this year, and she just feels like everything belongs to her at this point in her life.
Oh, how fun. Yesterday, I was in a business meeting and another recording as well, and there was a cat that popped up over the interviewee's thing and started looking around and everything else. So, you know, what's really cool is that this is the only thing that COVID has really brought to bear is the ability to have great conversations without, you know, having to worry about your backgrounds and enjoying cats and enjoying kids come into the conversation. And I mean, that to me is the best thing about. That's the only thing I like about COVID.
They're good company.
I mean, it is so much nicer to have meetings and discussions. But what's coming around the corner for Valerie? Valerie, what are you seeing in the industry right now?
The wind farm, I don't see how the wind farm can sustain the safety records most of them have on site. I've never worked on a wind farm that had what I consider even an acceptable amount of lost time accidents. You get a lot of... the same thing you see in any industry. You see jobs started before all the PPE is on site. You see jobs started before the safety training. When I did scheduling, I scheduled safety training into the schedule. I scheduled the ordering of the PPE, the delivery of the PPE. It all had to come before the training, and the training had to come before you started that action. But I've seen things for safety over the years that just really appalled me. And like I said, I stop them. And I people get angry at me sometimes, but I really don't care. I mean, somebody's life is at stake in some of these situations. And wind farms seem to have a particularly bad one because they do get lazy and they tend to work in sequential crews. Like they'll send a wind crew with the idea of having them work like three wind farms in succession. And they'll schedule it such if there's anything that goes wrong with the first wind farm, just like the margin of safety with the two jets at Austin Airport the other day, 100 feet between them. The FAA has said the margin that they have between flights is too narrow. They need to make a broader margin.
Right.
You've got really no downtime. And let's face it, you know, the reason you do risk management on a project is because there are things that can go wrong. You need to discuss the risks, evaluate the risks, and make contingency plans for them rather than saying everything's great and sunny and nothing's going to go wrong. And the wind farms start to get behind. And the further they get behind on the first wind farm, the more they start to rush it so they can send that sequence of people from the first wind farm to the second wind farm. And then the process continues with the third. And maybe I've seen up to five wind farms in a sequence.
Wow. And that when you are rushed, you throw safety to the side. And while we all joke in the industry about the safety man, or when you're on the pad and everybody, the safety man shows up and you got to have the tailgate safety meeting before the day and that kind of thing. It's like, there's a real reason you have safety people. I mean, it as much as we make fun of them, I'd rather have a good safety person or someone monitoring the programs than have that other incident or that company that you were at. That's horrible.
It really is. The most tragic accident that I ever heard about. It did not happen on my site, but it happened at a company next door to where I was at. The gentleman rode his son up on a beam of steel, on a sling, on a crane, and nobody was, which is a big no-no to begin with.
Oh,
and
then yeah.
Couple that, nobody was tied. He wasn't tied off or anything. He was just free and easy up there on that beam on a windy day. It was a crane operator's son too.
No way.
Crane operator's son. Son fell off, left a wife and two small children behind. Plus, he's the one that was driving that crane when his son died. For a moment of frolic that should have never, ever been entertained for even a second.
Is it the golden rule that if you're off the, is it 10 feet? I mean, you got to have safety. What's the number that you got to have, safety stuff on? It's not very high.
We use 10 feet in the construction industry that I worked in. And that's a pretty good rule of thumb. It's not a lot, but it's some, and it sets a parameter. I think you need to have a parameter for people. Otherwise it becomes an elusive goal to go after. It's like, I love it at your discretion or when convenient or things like that, because it's like, so when is it convenient? So what is my discretion? My discretion is probably different than your discretion, and then put another person in there and get a third opinion. So it just doesn't work out too well, but I've seen, that was a really sad, sad accident. And I often think of that young woman and her children who grew up without a father because of that accident. And I wonder about the relationship between her and her father-in-law too.
I'm at a loss for words on that. I mean, I don't even know how I would handle it if I had something like that happen.
But most of the accidents that the ones that I saw on the one site where there were three fatalities in 2 months, they were, somebody up in a tower all by themselves. That should have never happened. And that accident wouldn't have happened. People working in super muddy conditions, that job site should have been shut down because of the weather.
Right.
I mean, it was like working in one of those old Westerns where they're fighting their way through the mud storms trying to get to the next town. It was that the weather was that bad. Or having them work when there's lightning.
Right.
In the area.
A wind tower. Holy smokes.
Yeah. These just really, really simple, simple things that you and I would look at and say, that's just not a good idea at all. Don't even think that way.
Well, you maybe. I'm an idiot. And I was throwing a safety line on my two-story house in Edmond, Oklahoma. And I fell off a two-story roof throwing a safety line so I wouldn't fall off the roof. Now, what a moron does that, right? So I'm on the peak of it, and the thought going through my mind as I'm sliding down that roof, gutter, 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 hit the gutter, hit the gutter. And so I grabbed the gutter, bent the gutter, and it threw me back, and I landed flat on my back on a paving stone, breaking my back. I'm an idiot. And my wife came out there and she goes, "You're an idiot." Now, fortunately, she didn't say, "Get your own ride to the hospital," like she has in the past. But,
you did. You broke it. You take it and get it fixed. Huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had that happen before. But I'm accident prone. And Valerie, you would never want me on your job sites. I am a safety man's nightmare. I mean, there is just no way people will want me on their pads.
They make you wear two pairs of no-cut gloves whenever you have anything sharp in your hand, huh?
oh, I got to look like the Michelin man. You remember the Michelin man? You know, I look like him with safety gear. In fact, if I don't dress up like the Michelin man, the safety man makes me wear it. I mean,
here's your safety suit.
Yeah. I mean, I've got one of those things where you pull it and you, never mind. Okay. That being said, so what's next around the corner for Valerie Penamonte? What are you doing at your law firm?
Well, I work on primarily contracts. So I work on exclusively contracts and promissory notes and items of that type. The company I work for, John Davis Law, is a business firm. They only work with businesses. They work with companies. They function as their corporate attorney for smaller firms and startups, for example, or companies that just don't want to be encumbered and don't need a full-time legal officer.
Okay.
And I've really enjoyed the work. I really enjoy working with John. I really enjoy working with the people I work with. And I'm, for the first time in a long time, I'm really enjoying my job. And it's a very safe atmosphere, which I really enjoy too.
That's a good pun, Valerie. A very safe environment. So there's no cranes at the law office.
There's no cranes. Nobody leaves a file drawer out and walks away so the next person trips on it. We can see in some of the old safety films and offices. There's one from the 50s years ago. One of the managers at American Electric Power brought it in for safety day. And it was an old 1950s office film. And it showed people like leaving file drawers out on the bottom and then walking away, that some person walks through, trips over the drawer that's out, and then they hit something else. And then they show, you know, you need to be careful in office environments. Accidents can happen. It was really humorously done.
Right.
You know, you don't see as many file cabinets as you used to anymore. And right, you don't see that many people opening them on a regular basis. So you're less likely to have those kinds of accidents. But it really did a good job of bringing home the safety message with humor. I thought it was a very creative way to
right,
do a presentation for a safety meeting.
Valerie, you don't want me in your law office either.
Well, that's not my decision, but I will make sure I get the word out.
Okay. Well, Valerie, I had an absolutely outstanding time on this podcast, and I am so grateful for your time today. And we're going to have this in the show notes and everything else on your LinkedIn and how everybody else can get a hold of you and those things. So give Victor a hug for me. I enjoy interacting with him and everything else. And Valerie, your time was very much appreciated. Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity, and very nice meeting you. Please have a wonderful day.
Oh, you bet.